Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Yes, you guessed it. That's the sound of someone who's passed up the opportunity to listen to loads of extra bonus content from the Guitar Nerds. But fear not, you don't have to be that person. Head on over to patreon.com/guitar nerds and you can take advantage of literally buckets full of additional bits and bobs. Fill your boots with Guitar Nerds content. Why do I even do these adverts? Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Mark Packham.
Come on, City!
And Jay Cross.
I will not have that talk in my house.
Yes, that's right. We're recording this week. We're recording it on a different day this week, and it's actually it's a Manchester City versus Tottenham Hotspur.
Game come on, City!
Game of ball foot soccer.
It's really, really fun to do that. But I can see why they do it.
Come on, City!
We have to have it on in the background because Jay is a Spurs
supporter. Don't break the
supporter illusion.
We're giving this podcast our full attention.
Absolutely.
Yes. Well, this week we had originally planned to have a bit of a special episode, but we're going to be postponing that because we really want Matt back on the podcast.
Because Matt Knight's potato router has failed him again.
I love how professional this podcast is, except for Matt's router.
It's more professional than I would like it to be.
Yeah, I know.
Do everything I can to kind of bring down the professionalism.
I know.
But you still manage to...
Thanks.
You still managed to keep it on the straight and narrow.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so we're going to wait. Hopefully we'll get Matt back next week, and then we're going to do something a little bit special for everyone. But
I think we already decided he can't do next week. But you
oh,
know.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
He's dead.
If any Guitar Nerds listeners ever see Matt or, you know, see him in real life, take a picture, stick him on the forum, because we haven't seen him in
further.
Weeks.
If you want to send in applications for a podcast host.
We do. It does work better as a four. We definitely need a fourth person. We should take applications.
Not from these idiots.
No, you're absolutely right. Yes.
You need to know a lot about Boss pedals and weird time signature. No, that's you.
No, yeah, I'm not weird time signature.
No, that's it, isn't it? That's all he brings to the table.
Boss pedals and having, like, you know, a rig that takes up half of your bedroom, but simultaneously have never played a live show.
He has, but he has played a live show.
Yeah, I've been to one of his gigs. More than one of his gigs.
I put him on once.
Really?
Yeah. I put him on once. It was actually a very weird show. It was the headline band was this band Manatees, who are this fantastic, really, really heavy doom band from Carlisle.
Right.
And I put them on a couple of times. The first time I put them on, they were the loudest band I had ever seen.
Right.
Without a shadow of a doubt. They played in the downstairs of this small pub called the Hobgoblin in Brighton.
Yeah.
And there were 3-piece. The floor tom, the drummer's floor tom, was 18 inches.
That's so good.
Right. It was. It was the.
That's big, right? That's like a bass drum.
That it. So,
well, it's not quite a bass drum.
I think who was it? I was stood with. I think I was with Matt, who plays drums. Who played drums in the band I was in at the time, and plays drums in Mark's band. And I'm sure he said that it was the bass. The floor tom was bigger than his kick drum.
Yeah.
So that sets the scene. The bass player had a 8x10.
Right.
The guitar player had four 4x10s.
4x12s.
4x12s. Had two full stacks, yeah? And they were playing downstairs in the Hobgoblin.
I know that. Which is... What, the little stage on the, yeah, like, yeah, the side, yes, towards the back?
Yes,
you could,
yes,
barely get. You could barely get like a sort of covers band with like some spoons and a pan it and was, an acoustic guitar.
It was
up
honestly
there.
The most ridiculous thing I've ever seen, and they were but anyway, this next time I
you
saw
can't,
them,
you can't fit 15 people in front of them on that stage.
It was busy actually. It was a good show. But anyway, right, this time that I put them on, it wasn't quite. They only brought the one full stack. You know, they must have been traveling in a Fiesta or something. I don't know. But supporting was a couple of local bands. And for some reason, Matt was like, oh yeah, I've started a new band. Can I play? And I, you know, let him, his band open. And this was the band B-Movie Soundtrack was the name of his band. Right. And it was just him and his mate, Robin, who just had basically the main part of their band was a Boss SL20, the slicer.
No, the main part of their band was an ironing board.
Oh yeah, all the pedals were.
What?
So they weren't playing guitar. It was just pedals and I guess a synth or some sort of drum machine. And yeah, everything was going through the slicer. And yeah, all their pedals were on an ironing board, and they were just like messing around with the pedal. It was actually fantastic.
How were they creating a tone? Was it like a random tone generator?
Matt had, there was a few things. There was, yeah, like a little keyboard or something. But Matt also had these things by a company called Bleep Labs, which were basically like little robots.
Oh, okay.
That used like...
They were light sensitive, weren't they?
Yeah, light sensitive oscillators, basically.
Right.
No, light sensitive LFOs. So that is an oscillator. basically they were like little robots, and they had a little like dongle out the top that had a little bulb on it, and you like angled that towards or away from the sensor, and then it made different noises and stuff.
Oh,
it was pretty cool.
He's still got, I think he's got two of them. I think he still has them.
I don't know if the company's still going. At one time, like, I was like trying to bring some into the UK because you couldn't buy them here. Yeah, still going. Bleep Labs is still a thing.
But yeah, they were. So yes, I've seen. I think that's the only time I've seen him. But I don't think I ever saw him. He played in this punk band Ragweed for a while, and he took my bass on tour. I don't think I ever saw Ragweed.
He played bass in that.
Yeah.
Oh, is that when he bought? That was your Squire. Your Squire 70s.
Yeah. 70s. 70s jazz bass.
It was around that time that he was playing. His main guitar amp was a Mark bass, an old Mark bass amp, and he was using that. As a
guitar amp?
Yeah, because it had so much clean headroom.
Are you sure that's what he was using? He wasn't using a... Because he did buy one of those... whatever they're called. What were those Mark Bass really light amps? They were jazz something, weren't they? I think they were... He bought one of them.
I don't remember.
I can't remember either.
Can I say, I'm just doing a bit of research on Bleep Labs before we go further, and this will only be relevant to people who have seen the film Primer. But Jay, do you remember that bit in Primer where the time machine goes from the box?
Spoilers?
It's not a spoiler. The time machine goes from the box to, at the end of the film, it's like the size of a house.
Okay.
So
I mean, that's a spoiler.
That is absolutely not a spoiler, because from that description, if you understand that film, I've seen that film probably 15 times and I couldn't tell you what happens in that film. So Bleep Labs have gone from making pedals to essentially using the technology for, not pedals even, none of these appear to be pedals, they're all just boxes that make noise. They've gone from that to essentially building room-size versions that you can walk around in.
What?
That basically are, by the looks of things here, there's kind of like the light things that make these boxes work, but they're all like hung up in a room, and there's people like dancing around inside it, and I assume, I don't want to listen now because I don't want to put the sound on, but... It seems like that's going to be changing the sound.
Where is
that? What? It changes the sound depending on where
people are in the room, by the looks of things.
That is actually very... I'm into that a lot. Where is that?
I'm looking now. It doesn't say. It's in a warehouse somewhere, by the looks of things.
So I watched a documentary a little while ago.
Oh, it's in Austin, Texas.
Okay. I watched a documentary a little while ago on minimalism that the BBC ran. It was really, really cool, really interesting. I talked about it on the podcast at the time. And in one of the bits, I can't remember, I think it was the bit about Lamont Young, who's this, you know, very early kind of minimalism composer who's still, you know, rocking. He has he creates loads of like sound art pieces,
right?
And one of the things that he, and I'm sure I'm not remember this incorrectly, one of the kind of pieces that he put together was a room where there was loads and loads of speakers placed in different places, and each of the speakers played at the same volume a slightly different tone, and it was quite quiet. But yeah, basically, wherever you were, you moved around and these speakers would just fire a slightly different tone at you. And right. You could kind of create your own piece of music, I guess, by just walking in and around the space.
Oh, that's mad.
It's called like the New York like Museum of Minimalism or something like that. I'm sure the documentary is fascinating. I'd really, really recommend anybody who's interested in that kind of like weird, like Lamont Young and Terry Riley and Steve Reich, anything like that. Brian Eno, if you're into that kind of like weird, minimalist music, to check that documentary out. It's fantastic.
Oh, awesome.
How did we get there? Matt's not here.
No, Matt's not here.
So I'm doing my best. I'm doing my best to live the spirit of Matt through this.
Talk about like weird noise nonsense. Yeah.
So I'm going to start doing some gigs where I'm playing guitar. And I think maybe I should buy a new guitar amp.
Okay.
So at the moment, the guitar amps I own are a Vox AC-10. Probably not loud enough, really, to gig the AC-10.
I guess it depends on how popular this band's going to be. I'm going to assume that will be loud enough.
I think probably too much.
I've got a Blackstar riding core 10 if you want to borrow that. You're welcome to buy that
thanks.
With me.
Wonderful.
To be honest, I think probably what you want, Joe, is this thing called a headphone amp. then it's really just hitting the intended audience.
Great. Well, I really like the AC-10. The AC-10 is fun for home, but it annoys me that they've taken off the tremolo. So you don't have any tremolo, but you still have the reverb function that you get on the 15 and the 30. But the tremolo has always felt like an essential part of the AC amp. So it's a shame.
I mean, something's got to give. And if I remember correctly, it's not a tank, is it? It's a digital reverb.
Yeah,
in
it's
AC10.
A digital reverb. As
so
well.
I mean, in a way, it does seem a bit weird because if there's a digital reverb in
put the digital tremolo.
I mean, how difficult can it be? You know,
it is weird. It is weird. And do you know what's weirder? It's not that much cheaper. Than an AC-15. Like, just, I mean, I got it on a deal, but it was still like, I can't remember. I think it was like 350 quid, and I think a 15 isn't that much more.
You just
think they are, mate.
Are they?
Just think squeeze an extra knob in.
Yeah.
Vox AC-15. Okay, I can't really tell what's going on here. 300 and... Oh, no, it's the AC-10. So current price, just Googling it. AC-10, 359, AC-15, 500 quid.
So 150 quid difference.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess that's reasonable. You know what I should have bought at the time? AC-4. They just look cool.
They are great. I was always a big fan of the AC-4 ham wireds. I thought they were fantastic amps.
I like the fact that they keep doing new versions of the AC-4 in different finishes. And sometimes with different... They sometimes do the TV version.
Yep.
Where the Tolex is like cut out in the middle, and sometimes it's the traditional Vox thing where you've got like that top Tolex bit and then the mesh bit below. But they always look great.
I like the ones that had, what were the ones that had like the padded speaker cover?
The padded speaker? Are you talking about those digital ones? They still make the AV series?
Yeah, the AVs. They've got like a sort of cushion your old Nan would have. That's what goes at the front of the amp.
They are really weird.
Do you know, it's neat to picture that.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is.
They're really weird looking. On the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum, someone asked today or the other day about Epiphone Century. Amps.
I saw that,
which I replied to because I really like those amps because they're
the ones that are made of wood.
Yeah, they're wood.
I mean, amps are often made of wood, but they look very woody.
They're like the 1939 inspired. I don't know the deal. It's like it's it's inspired by a 1939 amplifier, but of what? I don't understand.
Well, an Epiphone 1939 amplifier, maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know the history of them, but I'm guessing. Otherwise, why would they put 1939?
Yeah,
inspired?
I know. I just don't know. I don't know what that amplifier.
Probably an Epiphone Century.
Yeah, fine. But anyway,
that's why it came out in the year 2039. It was to celebrate the anniversary.
Yeah,
right. Of course, that makes perfect sense. But yeah, I really liked them. They were like 12 watts, 14 watts, like that sort of clean. Like loads of clean headroom, but yeah, that's not right, is it, for that sort of low wattage? But you know what I mean. It doesn't break up very much.
Yeah, yeah.
Super cool. But when I was trying them, like really noisy in a cool old way, but like really noisy.
Where
you know loads of like buzz off of the amplifier.
Yeah. It's the same, and one that I think is underrated. Not back in the day, but a few years ago, the Epiphone Valve Juniors.
Were they underrated? Yeah. Everyone loved them.
The thing is that there was kind of nothing else like that at the time. No. You know, because they were, what, 5 watts, I think?
Yeah, and they were like 99
five
quid.
5 watts, they were super cheap. I mean, they weren't great, but they looked cool.
I thought they were good. They
sound fine.
I thought they were okay.
There was a fella, a customer at GEC, who used to just phone up and buy however many we had at any given time.
Because he was modding them.
He was modding them, yeah, and selling them on, yeah. But I dealt with him a couple of times, and he bought like sort of 5 one time and like 8 the other.
Yeah, people do a couple of different mods. I think it's quite easy to add like trim or something to them that people add in there.
They looked fantastic.
Add like an effects loop and stuff like that. So. Yeah. I've definitely seen those.
They looked great though, didn't they? Like the red Tolex,
What was the double one? The special. Valve special.
Yeah, the Valve Special. That was more, wasn't it? It was like 30 watts or something.
Yeah,
it was
like
full size head.
Two speaker? No.
What are you talking about? Two speaker? It was a head. Oh, did they
I'm talking about combos.
They did a combo.
Yeah, Valve Junior combo.
Oh, I was thinking of the head.
No, I think they did a Valve Special. No, Valve Junior head. I don't think they did a special.
Right.
But they definitely did a special combo, and I think it was basically a bit louder and a bit bigger, maybe even two speakers.
Probably almost definitely less popular. I think those sort of weird, like kitsch looking, like 50s inspired stuff only really works when it's like small gear. When it's big gear, it looks a bit rubbish. But yeah, anyway, so I was I think I want to get a new amp because I've got that Tweed Blues Junior.
Valve Junior, 8-inch speaker.
What about Valve Special?
10-inch speaker.
Oh, really? That's weird.
What? 2 12AX7s.
Was there a bigger one than that?
1 EL84. No, there was not.
Really?
Oh, don't think so.
I seem to remember there being a 2-speaker.
I mean, maybe later in the day they did a special 2x12. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, just looking at this article from presumably 1992 or something on the internet, because that's how old it looks. Just the two.
Weird. But yeah, so I've got the Blues Junior.
Get yourself an Epiphone Valve Junior.
But
have a look on Gumtree. I'm sure there's some up there.
Yeah. Yeah.
eBay maybe.
I could do that. But I need suggestions. I need suggestions for an amplifier. So I'm going to be playing my Gibson ES-175 essentially with a load of reverb and tremolo.
Okay.
What sort of music are you playing?
Doom. Classic ES-175 Doom.
It's like sort of weird folk Americana stuff.
Who else is in this band?
Emma, just my girlfriend.
Just the two of you?
Yeah.
Building castles in the sky.
Why is the Blues Junior not for you?
Well, because Emma might be using that.
Okay.
Through
can I
her Jaguar.
Suggest something?
What?
Get another Blues Junior.
I can't get two of the same.
Why?
Well, Blues Tuniors.
No.
just have. You should. Emma shouldn't use the Blues Junior. You should do what we have been suggesting for basically years,
right,
which is run in stereo and have a Blues Junior and an AC. Well, 10 in this case.
Oh, that's actually a great idea.
Yeah, absolutely.
But wait,
just run them in stereo.
What? But we can't both run them in stereo.
Oh, right. Is she playing guitar? I assume she'd be playing synth.
Yeah. No, she's playing guitar.
Right, okay.
Why don't you...
Well, how about this? Emma plays them both in stereo.
Right.
And you just go along for support and don't have to, you know, nobody has to put up with
your
mustachioed ramblings. Yeah, just why do you Emma have to get drive. Involved with your girlfriend's you art?
Yeah, there would be better guitar playing if I didn't
Why
play.
Are you here?
You can't even drive.
that is true. Although I did buy a car. Well, me and Emma bought a car. We got a beige Fiat 500.
Beige.
With a tweed interior.
What colour is it?
Beige.
Oh, okay, right, yeah.
But Boss Katana?
I thought about that.
I mean, you're going to be using loads of effects, presumably. So you want something that is like pretty like flat sounding, or can be. Good pedal platform, as proven by the amount of ridiculous math, prog, whatever bands you listen to that use Katanas now.
Yeah.
And something that, if you're going to be slinging it in the car, is not too big, but it's super loud, super reliable. Boss Katana.
I think you should pioneer a new genre and a new wave of, you know, kind of traditional folk Americana, whatever it was that you just said, whatever nonsense you just
babbled. That'll do.
And just plug that into the Helix and just go straight into the desk.
Yeah.
What sort of gigs is it going to be? Is it going to be something where you need an amp?
Yes, 100. Well, of course it will be, because I wouldn't be stupid enough to not have an amplifier. Who would do that? That sounds crazy. Even if it was a small venue, I would not have an amplifier. But yes,
who are you talking to?
Yeah,
I don't understand what you're doing.
We both use amps. You're looking at us and saying,
"Well, you were suggesting I wouldn't use an amplifier."
Well, yeah, but you could. I mean, that is a solution. But I mean, why don't you just get a Supro Blues King?
Oh, that
599.
That does sound cool.
They are good.
How? What wattage are the Blues Kings?
I believe they are 15-watt, 1x12. Yeah.
That sounds cool. Which one's the Blues King? Is that the one that's black or the one that's blue?
Yes, the one that's black.
I think you should.
I can't believe they're $599.
You could just get a Blues Junior.
I've got a Blues Junior. I don't want to buy the same amp again.
Well, I think you should go. You should borrow my 8x10. Just use that. Orange
that
Microterra.
Is a really good shout.
Orange Microterra into the 8x10.
To even better, orange pedal baby into the 8x10 with a load of guitar pedals in front of it.
Yeah, that's.
I mean, that sounds really amazing.
So it would sound really good, but it's not particularly practical for this.
We're talking about that fit in the back of a Fiat 500.
The smallest possible head, the largest possible cab. That's what I'm all about.
Mark Packham,
hello.
You sent me a link earlier.
Is that enough of that? You've decided that neither of us are any help, so you're just moving away.
I am completely moving on. Right, assuming that I'm hoping that the listeners will help me out from this point forward on that.
I think everyone switched off, mate.
Mark Packham, talk to me about the Hammer Jammer.
I'm about to read you a paragraph of text. The headline on the text is "Amazing Guitar Invention." The next paragraph, or the next part of it is, the hammer jammer is a guitar accessory. It features six little hammers that you tap with your fingers or palm. The hammers in turn strike the strings and set them vibrating. The resulting sound is both percussive and not unlike that of a struck harmonic. In addition to giving you unique sounds from any guitar, the hammer jammer lets you easily perform multiple string trills and unusual patterns. It also provides an alternative way of playing for people who have limited movement due to injury, illness, or age.
Oh, that's nice.
So, the hammer jammer, something that I discovered today because I saw that someone was selling one on a Facebook group earlier.
How much was it?
Great place to sell stuff, if you ask me.
It's go away.
Facebook
groups.
I agree.
Fantastic.
Really?
If you don't want to sign up for eBay, and you don't want to deal... No fees. But everyone's already on there. You don't need a new account. Fantastic.
All great places to buy Gibson guitars. And what, Joe, what's your job again? What can I slack off?
60 Cycle Hum merchandise.
So the Hammer Jammer is an attachment that you can fix. Seemingly, I mean, I haven't done that much reading about it.
Oh, I buy a few attachments.
It seems like it will fit to most guitars. There's footage of it on an acoustic or an electric here. And it's essentially a set of hammers, like you would find on a piano.
That
you tap.
Right. I thought it was like masonry.
No, like piano hammers. And you tap them.
Masonry? Like what are you talking about?
What's wrong with that? What should I have said? hand DIY. I just thought the whole thing
was ridiculous. Okay,
so you fix this to your guitar, and it goes over on an acoustic. It kind of goes at the base of the neck and sits over the sound hole, and on electric, it goes kind of over the bridge and sits over the bridge.
Oh, over the bridge pickup. It's in a different place on both of them.
Yeah, exactly that. So I guess that's because you want it to, you know, you kind of want to hit over the like just beneath the sound hole.
Yeah.
On an acoustic and on the bridge for the best like harmonic response, you want to hit near the bridge pickup. So basically, it's like a set of kind of levers, six kind of levers that you tap.
Levers and then to the Americans.
The hammers then strike the string. And there is, to be honest, there's some pretty impressive footage of people playing it. It is a ridiculous device. I mean, it's not something that
you're turning your guitar into a six-note piano, six-string
piano. Exactly that. It's not the sort of thing that really I would buy, but I thought it was interesting
to bring
like...
up. Like slap popping,
kind of, yeah, but it really, I think it's the accuracy there, because you know you've got these little hammers that are striking the strings rather than you kind of,
can you only get like a staccato note then, or I guess you could hold the hammer to get sustain.
Well, no, because that would be like holding the string, wouldn't it? So think about how a piano works. When you sustain a note, it's not like the hammer just presses down on the string.
I was thinking of the opposite, but yeah, I guess I was thinking the hammers would sit on the strings and then pressing them would lift it.
No, so
and then removing your finger would press.
In fact,
right,
it's not staccato at all, really.
Yeah.
The notes sustain. But yeah, really, very, very weird thing that I'm really surprised we've never stumbled across before.
Yeah.
Actually looks kind of cool. I'm thinking that we should try and get one.
Yeah, let's get. How much was it?
They're $70.
Oh.
So they're like not a lot of money, and they look quite well
built
as well.
Do you have to drill anything into your guitar?
Sure. Don't know, actually. I've not. There
I don't
is
really want to do that.
There is an installation video that I've not watched. They also have a blog.
Right.
So, ooh, how very retro of them.
So I don't know how much you guys have actually had a look at Alder and Ash pedal boards, because I know like we're mates with Rich, and I know that like Alder and Ash pedal boards have always been something that we've spoken about, but I haven't actually had a look at the options on the website until recently.
I tell you, the reason that you haven't had a chance to see him is that every time we go to a guitar show, you are like too hungover or too busy or too disinterested or something. So actually, I know about the range quite well. Yeah, of course I do.
Oh, that's nice. Tell me about the range, J-Cross.
No, Joe, you go ahead.
Okay, fine.
I want to know if you really know.
Well, yeah. Well, yes.
Because I already know. I don't need to prove anything to myself.
Okay, fine. Anyway, so I was like having a look. So I was like, man, I'd quite like a new pedal board. And then the other day when Matt from Fidelity Guitars came around, he brought his Alder and Ash pedal board, and I was like, this thing is really, really cool. I want to get one like this that looks like retro, and like pedal boards are so functional. And so industrial looking.
Well, that, I mean, that's been just the standard, hasn't it, since kind of Pedal Train have been doing their thing, is people want that kind of slatted design, lightweight metal, but really the pedals are taking center stage. It's not really about the board.
No, it's not about, but it's even like the case, you know. You think about how much like you like a nice tweed Fender case, but we never think about the fact that our pedals will come in these sort of horrible like industrial looking cases.
I mean, the gig bag that mine is in.
Professional people.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a four pedal pedal board, and the case is
what
in.
What do you use?
The smallest pedal train. Yeah,
but you use
the
gig bag.
I mean, the gig bag is somewhere in the house. Yes, I don't know where that is. It just sits in the living room.
Right. Okay.
I think this week I'm selling my amp, so I won't have an amp.
Oh, what, you're selling the Hughes and Kettner?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I don't need it.
What are you going to buy?
Katana or something.
Oh. Katana Mini?
No.
Katana Air?
50.
Katana 50.
50.
50. That's a good choice. I like the Katana 50.
Well, it's just, you know, the Hughes and Kettner, it doesn't sound that good at low volume, so...
Really? Isn't it like 8 watts or something?
It's 5 watts, it just doesn't sound that good at low volume, so... No. And the Katana does, so I'm swapping it out.
The Katana does sound
fantastic.
But anyway,
that's why I don't have a fancy pedal board.
I see. So,
That's where we were.
Yes.
Yeah. So, Alder and Ash, they do like four different pedal board types. They do the Journeyman, the Earl, the Gentleman, and the Esquire.
You can't get the Gentleman.
Why not?
Because you're not a gentleman.
I think I'm. I'm quite lovely. And actually, the gentleman was the one I was going to get, because the because the difference is the Esquire is now all with Alder and Ash pedal boards. They're obviously they're like a thick slab of lovely wood, and you get to choose from like mahogany and ash and alder.
Oh, there we go.
And oak, but you'd obviously go for oak because it looks awesome. But the Esquire is like a flat pedal board. So for people who are, I guess, used to... What's the brand that's not Pedal Train that's in all the shops still?
Diago,
yeah. It's kind of like, I guess, that sort of...
They're like flat boards.
Yeah, flat boards. And that's what the Esquire is. And you can get it in four sizes, so you have all the different sizes. Then the Gentleman is the first one that's on a slant,
okay,
in the same way as Pedal Train, yeah, which I guess is what you want if you're... trying to hit pedals on more than one. I don't know why you'd ever want a flat.
Yeah, I've always found that weird when people had the Diago ones when they had like two tiers of pedals, but they're flat. I just kind of think, isn't that just like a bit of a weird stretch over the top?
Yeah.
To like not knock the ones underneath.
Yeah, exactly. Bit weird. And then the Earl. I haven't actually looked too much into the Earl and the Journeyman, but I think the idea is that they have like a hinged top so that you have access to the underneath.
Who made Matt's pedal board? The one that's got like two tiers and stuff that slides in and out and hidden things.
He's got an Alder and he has got an Alder and Ash one, but he also has some that are the pedal board company or something like that.
Okay.
So he's got a couple. I think Alder and Ash did the two tier one, I think.
Okay.
But I'm not 100% sure. But anyway, I was like, you know, the Esquire starts at 150, Gentleman 175, the Earl at 200, and the Journeyman at 350. So that's why I don't know much about the Journeyman. I was already like, that's
what are you talking about? That seems like exactly the place you would normally start.
Yeah.
Yes, it probably was before I started just being paid by guitar nerds. But and that's like starting prices. So that's like starting for the smallest size, which is like... something by 7, it's 18 inches by 7 inches. 7 inches sounds like a single tier to me.
Yeah.
So that's no use for anyone who has a single tier. So, you know, £350 for a single tier, that's
a lot of money.
That's a chunk of money. So, yeah, so I was looking at the Esquire and the Gentleman, but these are just the boards. They're not the cases. So you do have to factor in the price of the case on top of that. And then they do flight cases or hard cases. And the flight cases are like your standard functional sort of black, you know, material with the aluminium.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, chassis.
Aluminium
bit.
Edging.
Yeah, that sort of thing, which is fine. They're functional. And they outsource those. Those boards are made separately. But then their hard cases are super cool because they look like a gentleman's luggage.
Once again, something that you should not have.
Yes. Well, anyway, so and you can choose like finishes if you go for the hard case option. But you do have to factor that in on top. And I think they're like an extra 120, 130 quid for the mid-size ones. They start at £80.
Okay.
So you could get a Gentleman for 175 and then the hard case for the Gentleman for a further £80 on top of it. That would be the cheapest you could get.
I'm into the idea of boutique boards, but... It does seem like a lot of money.
It is a chunk of money, definitely. But they look so cool.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? It's this ultimate extravagant guitar accessory purchase.
I want to make the ultimate hipster thing. I want to get a Fidelity guitar and I want to have an Alder and Ash pedal board and have...
You just want things that like...
And I want to have like brogues, two-tone brogues and...
Some steampunk goggles. Oh my god.
That sounds great.
That is the next evolution of you. That's your next like Pokemon step, is that you've gone from being punk rocker to...
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
I don't really know what you are.
Math
now.
Twerp.
Math twerp. Today you sort of look like Captain Birdseye.
Thank you.
Do you remember when Maddie and I were talking about this week? Do you remember when Joe discovered Peaky Blinders?
For 1 week.
About 3 years after it first came out, you rocked up wearing a flat cap, just like Tommy Shelby. And we were like, have you just watched an episode of Peaky Blinders? You were like, it's so good. What a great television show.
Do you know my whole band all bought like Peaky Blinders hats? And
they're called flat caps. Like
Peaky Blinders hats.
They had a name before that show came out.
Well,
as if it's like official merchandise.
Oh, yeah, it probably is. Comes with the razor blades.
Honestly,
built in.
I've been trying to work on my Brommy accent. Well, I haven't. I can't do it. I can't do it. My guitarist's wife is from Birmingham, and I try and...
Birmingham?
Yes. And I tried to... I'm using that name so that the Americans understand what we're talking about. Anyway, we should have a look at what's in this week's mailbag.
Mailbag.
So, this week we received a new delay pedal all the way from Japan. That's right.
I've got it right here. Are you sure it's the delay pedal? Is it not the time circuits computer from Back to the Future? Because that is what it actually looks like. It looks like, you know, when Marty McFly sort of hits all the numbers and then the thing comes up and he's like, you know, pissing about with that. That's what this looks like.
Well, it is the future factory from Free the Tone.
I wonder if that's why they've called it that, because like the display and like all the LEDs and like the color of the box and stuff do look a lot like the computer from Back to the Future.
I don't know. I mean, they do a range of stuff. They do another pedal called the Future Factory as well. The FF series is something they do. But yes, this is. There are a lot of LEDs on this pedal. Now, this is the RF phase modulation delay. So it is a delay pedal that does an awful lot. I really like the tagline that, you know, that Free the Tone have. Because like so many effects pedal brands, they have tone. Like do you remember like Valitone, their tagline is, "You rock." And it's just like...
So good.
It's like, come on, man. Go ahead. You put some effort into this. Free the Tone's tagline is... The holistic approach to system design.
Nice.
I like it. It's good.
So it's got 13... No, hang on. Wait. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 buttons on this.
Yes.
It's got a switch on the side that isn't labelled, and I don't know what that does.
Right.
Did you even notice that?
I didn't notice that.
Fine. It's got a switch on the back which switches the one MIDI port from MIDI in to MIDI out.
Right.
It's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 rotary controls, one of which is a push control as well. It's a delay pedal.
There's so much on it. But so they've got that. There's like a master rotary control, if you will, sort of on the pedal. And then what the buttons do is each of them will deal with a certain set of criteria. So you might have one that controls. There's one button that's sectioned off for either controlling depth or speed of the modulation. And so you can press that button to flick between whether that rotary control is at that point in time controlling the depth or the speed of the modulation.
It's almost like a multi-effects that's built up from modules. So what you've essentially got is, you know, there's like
kind of what I'm going to call the master module, which is basically your mix control and an overall feedback for the pedal for right. For the delay. Because I guess the idea with that is that you can get in and kind of like, it doesn't really oscillate particularly.
It's very digital, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it doesn't really oscillate.
Very
but it's,
pure.
That's not very free to tone though, is it? They're all about kind of like very clinical,
accuracy.
Very lush. Yeah.
So there's two kind of master controls and then you've got this big parameter switch, which basically controls the entire pedal. And then each of the things are like, so there's like different effects blocks. So you've got like your pan block, and if you want to adjust the pan, like the stereo pan, you hit the pan button, then you hit the parameter control.
Yeah.
And then to select when you've got it at the right value, you then click to select that. So the blocks that you've got are this master block, pan, the modulation, an EQ.
A three-band EQ. But that's the weird one, isn't it? Like, for me, it's like a three-band EQ is such a quintessential thing. And for this, you're like, I'm flicking through whether I'm controlling treble, middle, or bass, and then controlling the rotary individual.
Yes. Yeah. So you've got that. Then you've got a function block, which allows you to put in subdivisions and turn trails on and off. There's also the output block, which selects your master mix. And then I think you can do, like,
I think it will allow you to decide how much. I don't know.
Oh, I think it's like out. So you've got.
I started to formulate a sentence in my head there, and then I just sort of gave up.
I think the way it's laid out is you've got output level, so affected output level,
right?
Dry output level, but then you've also got a mix control to then blend between the two of those.
Yeah.
So then you've got the delay section, which is delay time, feedback, and tone. So bear in mind that you've got tone. And also the three-band EQ for the pedal.
Well, the three-band EQ allows you to control your EQ, and then that one is how you free the tone.
Right.
So you probably want that all the way to the top.
It's amount of freedom.
Yeah, amount of freedom. Yeah.
Is that the trail? So I could essentially...
No, trails is a separate function.
The thing is, turn the treble down on the trails and make it more analog sounding.
You've also got... how you want the delay time to be displayed. So you could have it in BPM, milliseconds, or PS, which I don't know what that is.
It's P's.
P's, yeah. P's. How many P's?
It just does, yeah. Just.
Then you've also got tap tempo, which can be assigned to the foot switch. And the foot switch also does your presets as well. So soft, like one tap is tap tempo. Right. Hold the button down, switches between four... presets on there, which helpfully are labeled PS1, PS2, PS3, PS4.
Lovely.
Like the PlayStation and that.
Yeah, I understood. Yeah. Which is funny because you can probably play Spyro the Dragon on this
machine. You could definitely get Doom up and running on this.
Almost certainly.
I'm going to level. I think Free the Tone have overestimated us here.
Me too. They don't know what they were doing when they sent us
that. It looks great, though. I mean, I saw this at NAMM. It was only when you started talking I remembered that I saw it at NAMM.
Right.
And I didn't have a chance to have a go on it, but I...
You wouldn't have been able to, mate.
No, I wouldn't have done. But now I'm looking at it, and now I'm looking at the controls, actually, I think it all makes sense. And it is just a completely different way of setting up a pedal as opposed to what we're used to, which is, you know, us just saying, okay, well, I want my knob to turn this way and, oh, there is more bass. You know, that's what we're used to. We're just like Luddites who want like a visual representation of stuff. But if you've actually got a bit of confidence and a bit of, you know, understanding of how these things work, which is who the audience of Free the Tone are,
yeah, absolutely,
then this is fine. You know, it really is just like, it is weird thinking, okay, well, I've got to control my treble, middle, bass independently, because you do kind of want to be able to hear everything individually. But I mean, realistically, you're only ever moving one controller at any one time anyway.
Yeah.
So just having to select what you're then going to control, it's not that different.
It's not that much of a learning curve, no. I agree. It's definitely a different way of approaching a pedal. And I certainly think looking at this with the amount of LEDs it has, you know, to someone who'd just seen the pedal would be immediately confused. But you know, after you get used to it, I think it's fine.
Yeah.
So the other thing we received this week is we got something through from Mellow Audio, the MIDI Commander.
You haven't even shown me this yet.
Well, I didn't see the point in bringing it. There's a link for it in the actual notes. If Joe, you have just, the notes just up
for
in front
the, for
of
the
you.
Audience, Joe just pointed at Mark's computer, but Mark thought he was pointing at the floor behind him, so he turned around to have a look at it.
Classic,
which
Chuckle
I thought
Brothers.
Was very funny.
Great. Well, I could see Mark's screen, and I could see that he was not on the podcast notes screen. He was on something.
We're talking
else.
About. We do this all.
Yeah, this is all in our brain holes.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, so Mellow Audio, who do a handful of useful tools for guitarists, have created the MIDI Commander, which there's plenty of YouTube videos, to be honest. It looks like they sent this one out to every influencer under the sun, right. Really. But yeah, I really like this product. It's incredibly well built. Smaller than you'd think. It's a 10 button controller. So think of it the same way as like a Helix would be laid out or something like that, or an ES8. Only it's complete sort of MIDI function. So you can integrate this with your laptop. You could use it with Axe FX. You could use it with a Helix if you have the rack version. You can also use it with a phone or an iPad. The reason it's quite good with an iPad is because you can get bias effects and bias amps on an iPad, and then you could integrate them with this MIDI Commander. So it switches up. It gives you an A through to D, and then two tiers of that, and then a separate bank up and bank down. It also gives you two expression in, so you can assign a volume. And a wah if you wanted on two separate foot switch ins. I mean, for me, like, obviously this isn't an effect, it's a tool to be used with something else, so it is what you make of it. But I was like, man, this is really well built. It's really compact and lightweight. The fact that you could rock up to a gig with your laptop or your iPad and be plugging it into something that's an actual premium quality product. Like, there are so many things that come out that are like for integration in this way.
I mean,
and they're always like, oh, I wouldn't trust that live, but this is actually a fully pro sort of quality tool.
I mean, there's a lot of MIDI controllers out there. For years, the one that we always recommended to people was the Behringer
1010.
FCB 1010.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Which has got a bit more on it than this, to be honest, because it's got expression pedals, which this doesn't. But they're pretty plastic fantastic, whereas this, you know, looks very, very sturdy. Neat little thing. What I do like in their notes is that they've put compatible with, and then they put loads of devices, loads of cool, like, new stuff, you know, iPhone, iPad, and at the end of the list, Pod 2.
I mean, why not?
Well, sure. I mean,
Guitar Nerd's Hall of Fame product.
Exactly.
Sorry, spoiler.
100%. 100%. Yeah, I'm into it. Looks neat.
Yeah, it's really cool. So I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I'm maybe going to...
Bit of a hard one to demo, really.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do something with, like, bias amp or bias effects. You know, plug that in. Maybe get that up and running on an iPad. But I'm kind of into it. I'm kind of into, like, the idea of, like, that being a full gigging rig.
Funny, a few years ago, I remember just seeing boxes and boxes of FCB 1010 MIDI controllers and thinking, no one uses MIDI. Why have we got these? And then they sat there for years, and now everyone loves the MIDI again.
Yeah, but this is only $150, like, to buy. How much was that Behringer thing? That was probably at least 100 quid.
Yeah, it was like 100 quid, yeah.
I mean, this isn't that much more. This is like...
10 times 10. That's why it was called that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it still available, the FCB 1010? Yes, it is. £109.
There you go.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Oh, inflation. It's gone up by 9.
Yeah.
The only thing that kind of puts me off about this is I just hear the Electric Six.
The what?
The song Dance Commander. Anytime I hear the word commander.
Oh, I see.
Used to be a dance commander.
Never heard that song.
Dance Commander.
I really like that band.
Of course you do.
What? What's wrong with that
just
band?
Weird tashes and that.
Yeah, they had great mustaches. They were really good. They did that gay bar song.
They did, yes.
That I really liked that song. It was really good.
I don't know why you're looking to us for approval about like this band. It's obvious Jay and I are not going to be into it.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I remember reading a review of them playing Reading, the Reading Festival in, I don't know, whenever that song came out, 2003, something right. like that. And they played quite late on one of the stages at Reading, and they played that song first, and everyone left.
That's not fair.
And the reviewer was like, listen, nobody likes when the band plays their big song last, but there's a reason everyone does. Because everyone just left.
It was indeed 2003.
I'm so good at this game. Good at that game.
Their drummer was called Percussion World, I think.
That was the drummer's name?
Yeah. That was what he was listed as. On
Percussion their... World. Percussion
he was
World.
Indeed Percussion World. They also had a member called Two-Handed Bob.
Anyway,
he's your uncle.
Indeed.
We should do some news. So, first up, Mark, tell me about Electro-Harmonix doing something for Old Rope. How does the expression go?
Yeah, that's actually the expression, doing something for Old Rope. Oh, you've got it. Yeah, you've got it. Yeah.
So,
give them enough Old Rope and they'll do something with it.
Remember when Electro-Harmonix switched to the smaller boxes, the Neo series, if you will, or the Nano? Neo.
Depends on how small.
Honestly, they were the same. I think even Electro-Harmonix got confused.
Yeah, sure. So the Nano, in that case, the Nano box.
The smaller one of the two.
Is Nano smaller than Neo?
Yes.
Yeah, so they were the...
It's because Neo...
Go on.
...is the Matrix.
So when Electro-Harmonix switched from the unsightly, unreliable, and frankly,
usable?
No, they were usable. They were just
really
bit big.
Good. Undesirable?
Not undesirable.
Impractical?
People who like them. Impractical. I wanted
Everyone
to go
wants
unpractical.
Them now.
Unpractical. Yeah, that's fine.
Remember when they switched from the full-size kind of boxes to the Nano series?
Can you describe the Nano series in three words beginning with un?
Un-big. Un-unpractical. And un... No. I'm going to use the two letters. Uniform, because they all look the same.
Oh, very nice.
So, remember when they did that and they had the small stone, there wasn't a small clone. That was called the Neo clone, but it was in the Nano box, which is frustrating. And things like, you know, the like Metal Muff Mini or Muff Nano.
They did the...
They all looked pretty boring, didn't they?
I can't remember that. Steel leather. Leather.
I think it was steel leather
basic spander. Yes. But they all had pretty basic designs and essentially were the same sounds as the big box counterparts, but just looked a bit more boring because they, you know, they basically took the artwork from those big box versions, but being a bit more uniform in those small boxes kind of took away the character slightly. So in a very, very weird move, considering that pedal has looked the same for... 10 or 12 years, Electro-Harmonix have decided, they're just going to completely change the design. It's exactly the same pedal on the small stone.
Which one's the small stone? That's the
Phaser. Yeah. Right. So they've gone from the kind of grey box with that kind of iconic Electro-Harmonix design.
I love that
And now
design.
They've gone for a black box with some sort of a groovy 60s writing on it that just says small stone in big psychedelic letters.
So do you know what's totally the weirdest thing about this? Is it was only, maybe 6 months ago, tops, that I Love Dust came out?
I don't know what that is.
The MXR I Love Dust series. I Love Dust being one word. I Love Dust. And they did exactly the same thing with their Phase 90. They rehoused it in a groovy I Love Dust.
Oh, yeah, these are
box.
Weird.
They also did an I Love Dust carbon copy.
Is I Love Dust like a designer or something?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
But it's funny because they really didn't sell, so now they actually go cheaper than the than the actual proper ones.
They look amazing. They How do look we great. Not talk about this?
I think we did talk about them briefly. I really like them. I really wanted to get one of the Phase 90s.
They describe themselves as an award-winning UK-based design crew.
Oh yeah, they're from Brighton.
Are they?
Yeah. That was something that I think Matt spoke to them about at NAMM because I think it was the carbon copy that I think Matt and I were together.
I mean, that looks way better than a normal carbon copy.
They both do. So it's obviously not great radio listener, but they are. I don't even know how to describe them. Like very groovy,
psychedelic,
sort of psychedelic things with some weird old faces on them as well.
Well, now the Small Stone has followed suit. Very much that kind of like late 60s kind of wobbly Woodstocky writing. So it's not the biggest news ever. It seems though the sound hasn't changed and the control layout definitely hasn't changed. So we'll see when we.
Would you buy a Small Stone or would you buy a Phase 90?
I would probably buy... Ooh, that's really difficult, actually.
I don't know if I've ever heard of Small Stone.
If it was an old Small Stone...
You definitely have.
Big box Small Stones were fantastic. The big proper ones.
Okay.
I don't know if something's changed in the circuit.
I assume it's exactly the same chip.
You reckon?
They're not the same sound. The big box. In theory, that was the plan of making them in these small boxes. But yeah. In my experience,
I mean, I know that was always the case with like the big muffs and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
It would be really tough. I always had sort of maybe like 5 years ago, like Polymath were really, really phaser dependent before we started using vibratos, but we used phasers all the time. And Tim always had a big old box Small Stone, and I had a Phase 90. And Tim's Small Stone just sounded absolutely like on the slowest setting, it was just the coolest sounding pedal ever, which I bought from him and now have. But
don't use, presumably.
No, it sits on the shelf. Yeah.
I feel like I want to revisit Electro-Harmonics because I haven't owned an Electro-Harmonics pedal probably since about. Well, that's not true, actually, because I had a Soul Food. But apart from the Soul Food, you know, like the modulations and stuff and delays and things like that. I've not owned one probably since about 2007.
Yeah.
And I want to just like go and listen to them all.
I'm going to get, you know, Matt went through this phase of buying memory men.
Toys and memory boys.
Which now I notice he's selling all. Of course. All of them. They've all turned up on.
That's because he started doing it before they started going up in value. And now he's buying low and selling high, you know?
Yeah, that's probably is the case. But I'd definitely get old ones. I think old ones are cool. Obviously, I'm going through a bit of a love affair with the Electric Mistress at the moment. They are super cool. I need to get an old one.
The one to look for is the Holy Grail. Big box Holy Grail.
They were great. God, sounds I remember great. When...
A bit breaky, though.
I remember like 10 years ago when post-rock was just sort of like, was fresh and new, how everyone had...
I mean,
it's probably longer than 10 years ago.
F-Sharp A-Sharp Infinity came out in like 1996.
Yeah, you're right. but just like the Holy Grail was such a cornerstone. Because was that before Hall of Fame came out?
Yeah, definitely.
And so because Hall of Fame wasn't out yet, the Holy Grail was probably the best reverb on the market. Probably the best thing you could buy. Everyone had one.
They big box ones you can get for £100.
Oh, wow, that's a great price for a great pedal. J Cross. Talk to me about Space Echo things.
Space Echo things, the Final Frontier things.
Yeah.
So
Space Echo things, the next generation.
Well, I mean, that kind of is what we're talking about here. So a company called Echo Fix. What do you think a company called Echo Fix does?
Is it like Airfix, but...
Company called Echo Fix, based out of Australia, they claim to be... one of the world's, maybe I'm embellishing this slightly, but they are a company that specialise in fixing tape echoes, Roland Space Echoes, and Echoplexes, and they hold a lot of stock of spare parts for those. And over the last couple of years, they have, according to their press release, in top secret, been working on their own modern day, analogue tape echo. which is sorry, I'm a little bit got a little bit of windy pops.
Got
a little bit of windy pops on there, and I'm trying not to belch into the microphone. I feel like that's a little bit, it's just not the done thing.
No, I mean, there's a certain level of unprofessionality that people expect on this podcast.
Unprofessionality.
Yeah.
Is it people using words like unprofessionality and stuff? Right. Okay.
Professionality.
Unprofessionalism that people expect from this podcast. Belching into the microphone is not something that they would tolerate.
I agree.
Well, you're right, Joe. You look like you're about to throw your lungs up. So anyway, Echo Fix, where was I? Echo Fix have been making their own tape echo, and they've been making it in secret. And they are now launching pre-orders for it. And it looks, I tell you what, it actually looks fantastic.
So what is this? This is like a rack space echo.
No, it's not rack. It's, well, I guess you could mount it in a rack, but it's like a an RE201 or something.
So it's in like a Tolex chassis.
It's in a Tolex chassis, yes. Oh. So it's all like properly housed. You can take the lid off and you can see the tape inside. It is, you know, fully analog from that perspective. It's also got a high quality DSP reverb in there. So, you know, it's not a spring, but that's fine. And you can do it's also acts as a preamp, so as a lot of these kind really cool tape echoes do. Couple of really neat features in there which set it aside from a lot of analog tape echoes. You can control the time and feedback using CV, which is really neat. So you can use expression pedals really to control those features. So for that'd be, you know, a big thing for synth players, especially if they're, you know, using CV. You three tape heads, but there's also a sound on sound head, which is similar to my tape echo, the SRE555, which was that one, and the 501 were the first ones to have sound on sound, which is like kind of an early looper. So you've got 11 different sounds that you can get out of the.
Oh, I am a big fan of this.
The whole thing looks absolutely astonishing. It looks really, really cool. And considering they are the people who, you know, they are sort of experts in tape echoes and fixing stuff, you would expect that this would have kind of all of the road hardiness about it that you would want.
$1,500 USD.
I'm not sure if it's US or whether it's Australian.
It's USD.
It is US. Okay, fine. Because I'm sure I read that they were in Australia.
First,
maybe I'm
50.
Incorrect.
They're making 50. They're going to be available in June. Oh,
I mean,
I tell
the
you
whole,
what, get your pre-order.
It looks incredible. It looks absolutely incredible. Really, really sleek. I tell you, it looks so sleek, it looks like a plug-in.
That was my first thought on it as well. Yeah. I don't know if this picture, main picture here, is like...
It must be a render.
A Photoshop, but like a render type thing. I was like, oh, okay, someone's made a new like RE201 plug-in.
I think it's just a smart photo.
Yeah, I think so as well, actually. But, I don't know, I'm not sure.
But when I saw it smaller, because it's got such a matte fascia, it looks like one of those, renders.
If someone was going to make a Space Echo plugin, that's what this looks like. That's what this product looks like.
But they can't use green because that's Roland. So
they've used
blue.
A light blue.
Yeah. I think it looks lovely. I think it looks really cool. Yeah. Really, really cool.
Yeah, into it in a big way.
Yes, they do look super cool. Anyway, that actually brings us to a close of this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. We're going to be continuing.
I feel like we talked a lot about guitars in that one.
Do you?
Yeah, I think we're going to have to do something about it next week.
Oh, yeah.
Well, luckily, on the Patreon, I put a shout out for listener questions.
Oh, did you?
So we've got tons and tons of questions.
Sorry, you are not listening to what
like
I just
it when
I
you
said.
Do that.
I said, we've talked too much about guitars. We need to do something about
it. Well, here's an example of one of the questions. Where was it?
I'm getting a dog. Help me choose a dog.
How much are you guys looking forward to Bill and Ted 3? So, you know, if you've had too much of guitars, there'd be questions like that. Okay. Don't worry.
Unbelievable. Okay, well, anyway, we're going to go and continue over on our Patreon episode, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support the Guitar
You can do
Nerds
it. I believe
podcast.
In you. I believe in you.
Jay has challenged me to do this without having a script in front of me.
I didn't challenge you. I just said you can do it.
So anyway, for $1 a month, you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. $1 a month will get you the episode ad-free and early. Isn't that wonderful? $5 a month gets you access to all the bonus content. You know, the Patreon episodes, the Hall of Fame, the other things that we do. And $10 a month, big fat 10 USDs, makes you an executive backer and gets your name read out in one breath by me.
See, I thought that was really good.
You did it.
Thanks, man.
You did
Thanks,
it. You
I
did it. You don't need. You didn't need the bad boy.
We've got some backing music.
I had a great idea for some backing music.
We've
and
got
it's
more
gone
people
now.
As well on the list. Okay. It's so, longer.
Are you
going to
make
than it's
it?
Ever been.
Okay.
What was that thing called? Bleep Works.
Bleep Labs.
Bleep Labs. I'm going to start. You ready?
Fire up the tunes,
Wait,
Jay.
Hang on.
Okay. I'm waiting.
He's waiting.
Wait, no, I've looked up bleep test, which is
no,
that
I'm
running.
No, I'm going. Thing. I'm going. Okay. Here we go.
I hate the
Here
bleep
we go.
Test.
Here we go. Just
awful.
Make some bleeps. Here okay. we go.
Blip, 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 blip. Blip, 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 blip.
Christopher Franklin, Andy Joyce, John Anglin, Adam Rice-Crisp, Jake Cutmore, Robert Dozens, Rob Drew, Scott Hamilton, Tucker Ramadan, Arnie Cooper, Ross Edwards, Nate Nagel, Stephen Hans, Rob Grant, Matt Roberts, Steve Lee, Emery, James Baker, Juan Goya, Aaron Sermon, Blake Wyland, Andrew Goody, Jamie Kemp, Jake Gray, Matt Bellamy, Martin Cliff, Scott Kennedy, Christopher Lucid, Ann Sams, Robin Smith, Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Mom Nordwick, Duncan Watson, Ed Bradley, Steve Markle, DJ Marcos, Michael McGray, Carlos Munzer, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Blair Tom, Scott O'Brien, Laurie Anstis, Paul Corrigan, Will Clare, Moog, Bramit, Milton, Adrian Day, Ken Sayers, Matthew King, Scott Gaines, Sean Armour,
That took you longer than it used to take to dial up to the internet.
Yeah, he'd already be on AOL right now if it was...
I think my dad still uses AOL.
Yeah,
I didn't know it was still a company.
Unbelievable.
Anyway, we'll catch you
they
next week.
They got bought
week.
By it's Warner's, I think.
Not anymore.
Got sold. It's
yeah,
not Warner's.
I believe so.
AOL Time Warner.
Yeah, I think they're not a thing anymore.
We'll catch you next week for more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Peace and love, baby.
Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.